All right, here we go. Welcome to the Wellnest, where science meets wellness trends. Today's topic is probably going to be a very controversial one, but I want to explain the backstory of it. And before I go into it, I want to welcome Sarah, my co-host. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, it's good to see you.
Sarah, my RD, who gives me all the tips and tricks to survive this crazy world. And I'm Walter, the co-founder of Hum. Today's episode is about, was inspired by this, by the oldest person on in history, and or recorded at least. Her name is Jeanne Calment. She's French, or she was French, and
she lived to be 122 years old.
So I was curious, since longevity is such a big topic right now, and we digged in a little bit into her lifestyle, and it turns out that she smoked 2 cigarettes a day, had a glass of wine every day, rode a bicycle until the age of 100, started to learn fencing at the age of 85. So a real force of nature, if you will. And I thought, let's dig into this topic, which is a bit controversial. It's like the fact that she smoked and had alcohol on a daily basis in moderation. Is there actually a benefit to alcohol or nicotine or caffeine? So that's the topic of today. It's a bit controversial, but before we go there, Sarah, how are you?
I'm doing good, you know, just rolling with the punches of life and all the full moon energy I'm here for. So yeah, I'm excited to dive into this as well, because I love any topic that really challenges the kind of set standards and the norms of the wellness industry, and it's like rebellious in nature. I'm here for it. So like, let's dive in.
All right. We're allowed to be rebellious for like once. Let's start. Pick a topic. We have a really good one here, like a good roster. Alcohol, tobacco, caffeine. Like, let's start. Like, what's your favorite topic around those three and longevity?
Well, let's start with alcohol. I think that's an easy segue in, because it's something that is such a prevalent part of all of our cultures. I mean, as an American, it's interesting, the dynamic and the relationship with alcohol. And I'm curious too, as a non-American, like, we grew up with different relationships with it. So yep. For us here, it's like very taboo, right? Like, you're not supposed to drink. You're not supposed to drink until you're 21, but then there's college, and that's kind of like just a wild world. But it's really something that we're taught is not to be touched until we're of a certain age. And then there's this really irresponsible kind of dynamic with it, which a lot of binge drinking and a lot of chaos. So do you have, like, when you were growing up, what was your relationship with alcohol?
So let me set the scene for you. So I'm one of 5 children, right? I have 3 yeah. brothers and 1 sister. And of course, we all had our lives and this and that. But every Sunday, we would get together for sure as a family and have lunch. So from an early age on, we have these big lunches. The whole family often bring friends and other family members just to be, you know, go even more to you. My closest family are 120 people, because my wow. father has a lot of siblings. My mom has siblings. They all had lots of kids as well. So we're a really big family. And we often had these lunches between, like, I would say, you know, 12 to 20 people on a regular basis. And as part of that, we would talk about everything that happened in the week, but also politics, etc. And wine was part of the equation, but not much, right? So even from an early age on, if you were a child, they would offer you half a glass of wine. You would participate in the sort of like congregation of other family members, but it wasn't a taboo at all. It was just a natural thing to do, but it was never at excess. So meaning, like, it was like once a week, you get a, you know, like half a glass of wine, and that's pretty much it. And so we grew up with alcohol in a way that it was part of a social occasion, and it wasn't yeah. a tool to escape life, really, or to get absolutely hammered and not, you know, not to remember the next day what you were up to. Of course, you know, when you go to college and all that, people like party harder and all that. But generally speaking, I think people are exposed to alcohol from a very early age, and I think they have a slightly different relationship that is a bit more like you drink it as a social in a social occasion, and that's pretty much it. And often wine is big in Europe as well. Like, you know, where's this wine coming from? Which year? Are we going for white Burgundy or like a Riesling, or are we getting red wines this week? So even the wine itself is a topic. Yeah. So there's a real, I would say, culture around drinking good wine And enjoying the moment. Of course, alcoholism is everywhere, right? And, you know, there are the issues. But generally speaking, you get exposed to it very early on, so it doesn't become this taboo. And as a result, you then go from zero to 100 overnight, basically. So it's very different.
Yeah. And that's our culture here. It's like you're zero to 100 because it's like, don't touch it. And then we go into this really big culture of binge drinking. And so when we're talking about health and wellness, we're looking at alcohol kind of in the way that you're describing, like how can you integrate it in a way? Like she's having a Jean. Glass a day. Jean, yes. I'm my new role model.
I know. And,
I
she had
fencing.
And she had two cigarettes on top of that.
Yes.
So like one in the morning, one in the evening, apparently. And that was it. She was very disciplined about it, like one glass and her two cigarettes. I mean, that was it really. But then back to the topic, because like, I think wine specifically has been widely studied for its benefits. I wonder, from a science perspective, is there anything in alcohol that is beneficial we want to talk about? Or would you say, no, that kind of research was sponsored by industry? That often happens as well. But, you know, what's your perspective?
Yeah, well, I have always looked at alcohol as something that in moderation can be healthy. And there's been many studies. The one from Harvard Public Health looked at just alcohol consumption, not necessarily specific to wine, beer, vodka, but just alcohol consumption in and of itself. One glass a day for women, two glass a day for men was linked to a lot of health benefits like cardioprotective. And I think that's related to, especially when we look at wine, there's compounds in wine like polyphenols, which are really good for your gut. They're antioxidant in nature. They're just beneficial to the body. Anytime we're kind of calming down and decreasing stress, that's also super helpful. And you mentioned being in a social situation. So I think there's a lot of ways in which it can be helpful. And then once you start going past that, there are negative consequences. And I think it's fascinating to just kind of see like that J curve where a little bit can be helpful. Doesn't mean if you don't drink that you should immediately start integrating it. It's just kind of looking at how does this integrate into a healthy culture and a healthy way of life? And there are benefits that you can measure. So I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah. And you mentioned polyphenols, which is obviously widely studied. And I think there was a study years ago. I'm not sure this is actually true or not. It's like that champagne may help prevent dementia. I still remember that article very. And I think, didn't you like co-author this one? I forgot. Like we published it on our
Maybe.
Blog. I think, I don't know, but like that was an interesting one. So outside of like cardiovascular health, are there any other properties that are in polyphenols, say, or like in red wine specifically, that could be beneficial?
Yeah, so I think of it too, also in, I mean, everything, right, through the lens of gut health. And polyphenols are really big food and fuel for the microbiome. So it does help with microbiome diversity. It decreases free radical LDL oxidation. It helps lower blood pressure. It also just helps when we look at metabolic disease overall. So it can be a really beneficial part of just health and well-being, again, when it's done in moderation and in the context you're talking about, where you're socializing, you're with other people, and it's not, and it's bringing joy in your life.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm always interested in things that are probably not spoken about so much. But how about a hot toddy, for example? I still remember once I went to Ireland in a previous life. I had a company that we did a lot of business in Ireland. And I remember flying back from, where was it? Cork airport back to London, and I was miserable. And everybody's like, have a hot toddy. For those listeners who don't know what a hot toddy is, I believe it's tea with like, it's literally two drops of tea and like tons of whiskey on top of it, really. I mean, look, I couldn't feel the symptoms anymore, but I'm not sure it really cured my cold. But like, what's your perspective on a hot toddy?
I think that one's controversial. I don't know if there's the research that shows that that's beneficial, but I do love the cultural nuances and just like the little, what you would say, like old wives' tale and things that we learn, because sometimes there is, like, for me, it's chicken soup. Not that that's a hot toddy, but like in the Jewish tradition, it's like, we call chicken soup penicillin. It's the Jewish penicillin. So It's always, I always like to lean into and really try and dig around and see like what are the potential benefits there. And it could be antimicrobial, antiviral, but it's not something that I would say, if you're sick, definitely go and have a hot toddy. I think we have a lot of other, a lot of other options that can be more beneficial and support the immune system.
And often you find like medicinal herbs being preserved in alcohol and tinctures, you know, so very small amounts, obviously, of alcohol in those tinctures. Because you don't take that, just a few drops. But again, there's alcohol there as well for preservation purpose, I would imagine, right?
Yeah,
To extract certain ingredients. So we should understand as well that it's been used in, you know, in health for for hundreds of years. Are there any safe amounts of alcohol to consume? Because obviously, again, there's a lot of like conversations, like where it's like it was like one glass a day, moderation, whatever that meant, depending on the study. Now there are new studies that suggest there's absolutely no benefit. You shouldn't drink at all. That's much far superior. What's your perspective on daily intake?
Yeah, so I think if it's not a part of your lifestyle, I don't think it's something you have to run to include. I think generally one drink a day is good, like in that J curve of health benefits, you can find health benefits from that. The Harvard Public Health put out a study that looked at one drink for women, two drink for men, actually decreased heart disease risk by 20 to 25%. So that's a really interesting statistic to see. And again, it's nuanced. It's not that black and white where it's like, oh, if I have a drink, I'll be protecting my heart health. But it can have that benefit. So it's always looking at overall, like, what is your lifestyle? What are you eating? What is your stress level? And how does that integrate? Because it's not, I think oftentimes we're like, oh, alcohol is bad and it's black and white, and it's not. So that's really the kind of takeaway here, is that it's not always a bad thing. And it can be part of a healthy, balanced, nutritious lifestyle.
And I was always curious. I never questioned this, and we didn't talk about this question beforehand, but like, why is it like one drink for women per day and two for men? Why is there even a difference?
I would say generally just based on like body mass index and size. Like, women are generally smaller, less muscle mass than men. So therefore, men with more muscle mass have just more metabolic activity. They're able to detoxify better. Something that is interesting to consider is also genetic predisposition. Like you had mentioned alcoholism a little bit earlier on. And if there are any sort of like genetics or predisposition or history with alcoholism, it's something I would definitely say to avoid. And when we start to look into people's genetic makeup, I used to run all of these genetic tests on clients that I worked with. And you can look at detox capabilities, specifically like phase 1 and phase 2, how effective those are. And so people that have more effective detox capabilities might be able to metabolize more efficiently alcohol. So therefore, maybe a woman could have 1 or 2 drinks and be fine. One of the best things to do is just to check in with yourself and to say, how does this make me feel? Because if you have a drink and you're like, I have a massive headache, my face is flushed, I immediately want to throw up and I have diarrhea, like whatever it is, don't drink it, you know? Like, we don't have to bypass our own knowing because we're like, but I heard on a podcast it might be healthy. It's like the leading force is always check in with your body, see how it makes you feel.
I think that's really, really good advice. And I think maybe it should be more like depending on your specific body size and, you know, body type, maybe you want to consider one drink and perhaps two, and that's about it. But I think that the upper limit seems to be two, and I think people agree on that. And, you know, and in general, obviously, you know, everything in moderation, and like, I think your advice of paying attention to what your body signals to you is a really good one. Is there anything else you want to talk about when it comes to alcohol, or should we move on to our next hot topic, caffeine?
No, I mean, alcohol, it's a good one. It's it's a good topic. I'm glad we got to discuss it. And yeah, let's dive into the next part of this interesting woman's life.
And next time I see you, we're going to raise a glass to Jeanne for sure. All right, caffeine. Just to be clear, Jeanne, she didn't speak much about caffeine, but she ate a lot of chocolate. I didn't mention that. I think about 2 pounds per week. She really loved her chocolate, which probably suggests there's something in chocolate that's also beneficial. Or maybe she just enjoyed life and, like, you know, so that was her guilty pleasure. But anyway, caffeine. What is caffeine?
Caffeine is a psychoactive, so it's a stimulant, and it's probably the most widely used stimulant in the world, I would say.
And where can we find it? I mean, obviously, we know coffee has caffeine, but are there any other places we should think
yeah.
about?
Coffee is our most prominent source. Tea is up there as well, like green tea, white tea, and black tea. And then also, like you mentioned, chocolate has a little bit of caffeine, but those are our main sources. And then if it's being like put in a drink or in a gum, you'll find it there. But naturally occurring, those are going to be your top sources.
Do you drink coffee, by the way? I never asked you that.
I don't. It just like I already run kind of anxious. So for me, when I drink coffee, it's like it's an uncomfortable feeling in my body. And I would do it when I would do like trade shows or I need to be like up and like have that kind of frenetic energy. But on a day-to-day basis, it's such a bizarre sensation because it's like I'll still be calm and you'll never know. But like inside, it's like so I avoid it.
I'm the opposite. I love coffee. I drink so much, so many espressos here in the office. I think probably five on average a day. I mean, I just love coffee. And you know what? Once I tried not drinking coffee for a period of time, this was probably the worst headache I ever had in my entire life. Like just like withdrawal symptoms from caffeine. They're pretty severe. It took me a couple of days to get used to that. It was really intense. But there are studies, and you mentioned that obviously caffeine is psychoactive, that link coffee or caffeine to lowering the risk of type 2 diabetes, for example, even Parkinson's. I mean, again, there was a study that said there's a 30% reduction in Parkinson's for people who took about 3 to 5 cups of coffee per day. What's your perspective?
That's crazy. To me, that's like high. Because if you think about it, you have a cup of coffee is about 100 milligrams of caffeine. So if you're dosing and you're saying three to five cups is upwards of 500 milligrams of caffeine per day. And like high levels are over 400. So to me, that was shocking to hear that 3 to 5 cups is what was studied. Because that I would say is a large amount of coffee.
Yeah, and I'm always curious with these studies, what I like to look at, and I didn't look at this one specifically, how it was designed, is like, did this also signal that these people were just very social and would just have endless coffees with their friends, and therefore, meaning perhaps, again, as we said earlier, there's a social component to it, and maybe that helps as well with like brain stimulation and longevity. I don't know, but like, did you read the study which was specifically the one that mentions a 30% reduction on Parkinson's?
Yeah, it doesn't talk about the social aspects. It talks, I don't even know if it talks about the dietary aspects, because that's also another interesting one. Like, was it given with food or on an empty stomach? That also can have an impact on the way it's metabolized. So there's a lot of, and like anything you study, there's so many factors and variables that it's really hard to always isolate and say, oh, well, 3 to 5 cups in a study setting is going to be also equivalent to then what you do in your day-to-day life when you integrate that. So it's always interesting to look at these. And that's why I think it's beautiful we can have these conversations about it, because here's some information, but how do we make it actionable and relatable? Because again, we're like 3 to 5 cups. To me, I would never tell someone to drink 3 to 5 cups. I think, I mean, in your circumstance, if it makes you feel good, again, like that's so interesting. But like, you're wired really different than me.
I think I'm beyond this point. Even like, I can drink coffee and sleep, no problem. It's just sort of like
I find that fascinating. When I was in Paris, we went out to dinner really late because we were there in the summer and the sun was up. It like didn't get dark until 10:30 PM. It was incredible. But we were going out to dinner at like 9 PM and I would eat and, you know, my friend would get an espresso at the end of the meal and then she'd pass out. And I was like, how on earth do you do that?
Yeah, well, you know, there are some studies suggest if you take, it's called a nappuccino. So you take coffee and then you take a nap right after, but it's like a power nap for 20 minutes.
Remember that?
We spoke to the sleep doctor. Exactly,
yes.
The sleep doctor.
And he talked about the nappuccino. I remember that.
So yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's a very interesting ingredient. Definitely worth revisiting. There are other, there's obviously the risks, and I think the sleep part is obviously something to talk about. Are there any other risks of consuming caffeine or perhaps high amounts such as like 400 mg and more per day?
Yeah, so that's where, like, with my experience being more anxiously wired, it really kind of gets me out of my body, and then I can't sleep. And then when you're not sleeping, it's just like a domino effect of everything else not being super effective, because then you're in that, like, tired cycle, and then you need more energy. And now you're going, I'm like, I must have more chocolate and carbs. So it's a really, for me and people that are more anxious wired, it's really dysregulating. And it's really like, it's not just the coffee, it's then the repercussions of like the rest of the day is kind of altered. So that's where I'm like, I think if you enjoy drinking coffee, if it's a habit, you have your routine around it, you love the smell of it, it's just something that's really nourishing, having a cup or two is totally fine as long as it makes you feel okay. That's again where we go back to check in with your body. Because if you have it and you're feeling horrible, but you're productive and you're focused and you're all these things, but you're overriding what your body needs, then we've kind of missed the mark with how it can be beneficial. So it's really important to constantly go back to like, how does that make me feel? Am I dependent on it? Do I need it to function, or do I just enjoy it? Not looking at anyone in particular.
Yeah, well, I was like, oh,
you know,
I think I definitely am dependent on it, but I enjoy it hugely. So it's like, it's a very interesting, I wouldn't call it a symbiotic relationship, but it definitely is a relationship.
Sounds a little more addictive. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like it can be used in a healthy way, and it does. It is that psychoactive. So it does give us that boost of energy, which is fine, as long as we're not overriding those moments when we need to sleep or when we need to relax, or when, you know, if it starts disrupting all of those cycles and patterns, then it's just something. I never say bad. It's just something to get curious about.
Very curious. Well, look, I love my, like, you know, this may sound silly, but in the morning, I drink some lemon water, then a tea, a green tea, and then I have my coffee. But when I go to bed, I even think about that cup of coffee I'll be having the next day, and that gets me very excited. So
I love that. That's joy and pleasure, and that's totally very nourishing.
And like, immediately something to look forward to. How about adding coffee to milk to coffee? Because I've read some really confusing studies on this one. Some people suggest it's actually beneficial because the milk proteins bind with the polyphenols, so it's beneficial. And then there were other studies that said actually milk makes coffee consumption worse. So I'm a bit confused. Do you have a perspective around coffee with milk?
Yeah. So, I mean, there can be benefits. There can be that anti-inflammatory benefit for sure, depending on the person. I typically work in a population of people with digestive issues, and oftentimes dairy is very problematic. Mm-hmm. So it comes back to, can you tolerate dairy? Does it disrupt your digestion? Does it create more bloating? And if not, then a good quality, that's actually really important to think about. The quality of the dairy that you're using and also the quality of the coffee is going to impact how it kind of interacts with your body. So the more quality, the better. I think adding a little bit of milk is totally appropriate and can have those health benefits as long as you can tolerate milk.
And then let's talk about bulletproof coffee. That was a really hot topic years ago.
That was wild. So
remember, like, suddenly, like, I never, like, MCT oil in coffee, I never tried it, to be honest. I just wasn't tempted.
I tried it. I was like, oh, MCT oil, because it's really fascinating how it can, just the mechanism of how it works in your body, and it can really help with satiety and blood sugar stability. So I was kind of interested in it from that perspective. But also there's like a little warning on the box that says like, can cause diarrhea. So it's like anything where it's like, oh, am I going to poop my pants if I have this or not? Like, always just interesting to take into consideration. But I remember, I mean, I've been in the wellness industry for a long time, and I remember going to these conferences, and they would have like the tea and coffee station set up, but the urns of coffee were full of butter coffee, and everyone was just like, and like so into it, and it was such a rage.
People were obsessed with
obsessed.
And then it just evaporated.
Yeah, I mean, then people started to get their blood work done, and it's like, oh my god, your lipids and triglycerides are high.
Because I think it's not so good for your cholesterol. Is that correct?
For most, I would say most people do not benefit from having additional saturated fat in the diet. However, like with anything, I would run labs on clients that were like, this is my, I do this every single day, and their lipids were totally fine.
Interesting.
So it, yeah, it's fascinating. All of these things are never a one size fits all, but generally, if I'm saying like, what is the general recommendation? I would say butter in your coffee is not that great.
Well, let's light up the conversation with nicotine. So that's our next one on the list. And again, Jeanne, she smoked two a day. I mean, she really, I would say, bursted that bubble from a scientific perspective. But joking aside, are there any benefits around nicotine? Because obviously, you know, there's obviously vapes and patches. And I mean, there's just so many forms. And like, there was a moment when we thought it's all going to disappear, right? But I think like a lot of people that are going back to vaping right now, for example, or these, what are they called? These things you pop in your mouth and let them, what are they
design?
Called? Yes, exactly. I've seen that lately a lot as well. But before we go into delivery mechanisms, like generally speaking, is there any benefit to nicotine that you could think of? Are there any studies that would suggest so?
Yeah. So the studies that we're seeing, I found this to be very fascinating, right? Because it's that going back to the rebellious side of wellness, it's like nicotine is bad. That's been kind of like the message. And we do see that people that are smoking have higher instances of lung cancer, and it is very detrimental to the health. So I'm not challenging that. We're just looking at nicotine as a compound, as an active compound, because we have receptors for nicotine that are the same as acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter that helps just kind of calm the body and promotes digestion. So for me, I'm always like, is it good for digestion? And then researching rabbit hole. But what we're seeing is these very preliminary studies. So I think we have to kind of just address that there's not really any like hard evidence to say like, yes, go slap on a nicotine patch. This is the next best thing. Like, we have to take it slow and we have to really understand the benefits and the challenges with it. But there were a couple of studies that looked at the therapeutic value in Parkinson's, and that it could potentially have a neuroprotective effect. So it's helping and protecting the brain. So just that is so fascinating, and it warrants more research, a deeper understanding, but it doesn't make me, like I said, again, be able to say like, yeah, this is the next best thing. We still have to understand it, but it's a natural substance, right? Like it comes from a plant. So it's kind of
tobacco plant. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So it's like, we have this in nature, and we're finding more of these psychoactives, like, you know, THC, CBD, that's all been really hot in the wellness world. Obviously mushrooms and psilocybin are coming up hot. Ayahuasca. Like, I feel like everybody I've ever talked to now is like, I'm doing an ayahuasca ceremony.
Let's keep that one for another episode here. Like, I mean, that is there's lots to talk about here, but like, for example, take NAD, for example, right? I think the molecules are actually, they're not the same, just to be really clear, but there is some similarity between NAD and nicotine, right? From a molecule perspective. And I was wondering, you know, whether that could be beneficial. Anyway, I think the verdict is out there. It's very controversial. Yeah. And just to be clear, the last thing we want to suggest here is like to go and light up after this podcast. But I think it's important to talk about these topics as well, because often there are, even with something that's extremely bad for you, there can be benefits, right? And I'm thinking about discoveries in, you know, certain snake poisons, for example, are used to treat diseases, right? I mean, and like, of course, it comes down to the delivery mechanism and also the quantity. But I think it's important to talk about these things. And there's definitely a trend, I would say, towards it, specifically with those nicotine pouches that you put in on your gum, basically.
And I think delivery, that's like the nuanced piece here, is when we're looking at delivery, obviously smoking it is going to be more harmful, especially in a cigarette form, because you're getting tar, you're getting all of these other preservative and harsh chemicals that are going into your lungs.
I think like 168 toxins are in like the average cigarette or something like that. I mean,
it's a toxic one. So when we kind of take that out of the equation and we're just talking about pure nicotine and how we can deliver it in its purest form without all of that, that's where, for me, the curiosity is sparked. And I'm like, oh, this is fascinating. So I think it's definitely something to follow and see as the research kind of matches the trends and what people are saying about it, just to kind of follow it and to stay curious, because I'm really interested to see just how things develop with it.
Yeah, and of course, lots of people take certain, these patches to stop smoking, and of course, we want to encourage them to do that. But generally speaking, this is really about like, is there any benefit in nicotine or not? And then the delivery mechanism plays a huge role. I believe vaping is particularly bad for you. Don't know why,
Yeah.
but like that's what I read about. And then the other piece, of course, is like I was just curious about these patches that you put in your mouth, basically, and see what happens, because you can obviously take, they're like, little pills people can take. I mean, there's so many delivery
Yeah.
mechanisms.
And that's where we have to, like, again, weigh out the exciting information that we're finding, where it's like, oh, it's neuroprotective, but also there are studies to show that it can increase inflammation and it can lead to gastrointestinal issues. So we always have to look at both sides. I think in
Totally.
this space, it can be really easy to be like, woohoo, that's so cool. And like, we have to stay grounded in it does multiple things in the body. So that's why, again, I just say flag it for
Yeah.
curiosity and keep an eye on it. Maybe, we'll do another episode when there's more research out. But I think at this point it's interesting. That's where I'm kind of landing. I'm not going to go put a patch on or,
No.
do the Zyne in my mouth. I think I'm not there yet. Maybe I will be. I'll keep you posted. But I think, yeah, just following it is really, really
Yeah, and let's
interesting.
remind our listeners, based on CDC data, that tobacco is literally the leading cause for preventable death, about 500,000 a year. So, and I don't know if you remember that on Santa Monica Boulevard, there was that poster in LA, which had, it was like a counter. I'm not sure it's still there. Do you remember that
Oh, that
one?
was counting how many people were dying.
Yes, do you remember that one? And
Yes,
then
I do.
people would actually go there for like on the 31st of December, when the clock went back to zero. It was almost like the sort of like very morbid version of the ball drop at Times Square. But anyway, yeah, so let's just remind people that it is quite serious and it's highly addictive as
Yeah.
well, I think. And one really has to pay attention to this. But I'm glad we spoke about it, because everything should be talked about. And I think the more you speak
Yeah.
about topics and educate people, the better. Let's move on to our next segment, our well yes and well no. Sarah, do you want to get started this week?
Sure. My well, yes, is matcha in the morning. So I don't do coffee, but sometimes if I need that pick me up, I love matcha because it has the caffeine, but it also has a lot of beneficial antioxidants. So it's just a fun little thing if I'm feeling frisky. I realize I'm kind of boring. Like I'm not a coffee drinker, I'm
Okay. Oh,
not
no. Let me just
alcohol,
say
but
this. I've seen you many times, and we worked together for many years. Whenever I'm with you, it's never a boring moment. So I don't know why you call yourself boring, because the opposite is true. Honestly, I mean,
oh, thank you. I'll take that.
that is not the truth. But honestly, okay. So matcha. What else?
And then my well, no, is energy drinks in general, period. Like any sort of energy drinks, I'm not into. I think they're, it's just too much. Like I said, I'm already anxious enough at a baseline. Like I don't need it. So that's my well, no.
Well, it's also, they're highly addictive, these energy drinks. And like, that was my well know as well for this week, funny enough. So it's like we have the same well know. That's a first. We need like a sound, like a special sound effect for these moments.
Ding
But the reason I don't like them, number one, I think it tastes ghastly. Number two, I drink so much coffee, so I
ding.
really don't need them. I think that would
Yeah.
really like put me over the edge. And then the third piece
Yeah.
is like, apparently, and I'm not sure this is true, I want to look into this, but like the combination of high amounts of sugar plus caffeine is really bad for your brain. You get really hooked on it very quickly. So definitely something I want to stay away from.
Yeah, for sure.
And I love my coffee. I don't need an energy drink. That's that.
No, you're definitely getting enough. If anything, if we've just figured out anything from this episode, it's that Walter, you do not have a caffeine deficiency.
No, I don't think so. And my well yes is a glass of good red wine or good white wine. I love
Beautiful.
really good wine. Honestly, I think there are certain wines that are just like, they're like a poem written by
Beautiful.
no, it is honestly, it's like there, I tried this red wine. It was a Bordeaux. I have this friend, his family's in the wine business, and he always makes people try different wines, and you have to guess where it's from and this and that. I never guess obviously where they're from, because I'm not like a master of wine. But one of them, I was like, literally, I was like, I think like an angel just kissed me. It was like just so beautifully balanced, like from the like the scent and everything was just a delight. And pair that with a nice meal, like ideally, like you know, some pasta, whatever. I'm the happiest person. That's my well. Yes, it just makes me extremely happy. And there's benefits to it as well. All right,
yeah.
Let's move on to our RD rapid fire. As always, rank these from 1 to 10, with 10 being the best for your health. So let's start. Well, that's something close to your heart. Matcha.
9.
Espresso.
7.
Oh, you're breaking my heart now. Nicotine patch.
1.
You're very generous today. I love that you gave that a 1. Red wine.
We'll give that a 9 for you.
Tequila.
6.
Dirty martini.
Wow. 5.
Oh. Margarita.
1.
To vape, I guess that's vaping nicotine.
Yeah, 0.
A tobacco chew.
0.
Coffee on an empty stomach. Oh, that's an interesting one. I didn't ask you about that earlier.
Yeah, that would be a 7.
Breakfast before coffee.
9.
And then caffeine past 3 p.m.
5.
All right. That's it for today. As always, a reminder, please, 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 everyone, everything in moderation, and please don't start smoking after this episode because we talked about the benefits of nicotine. But I want to say a massive thank you for listening and also for turning into this episode. And a big thanks to Brooke, our producer, and Fatima, who is right there making sure the sound sounds great. If you liked what you heard, please give us a like and subscribe. And if you haven't heard a topic you were interested in so far, drop us a comment and let us know what you want to hear about. Sarah, thank you very much. As always, it was a pleasure. And
thank I speak you. To you so
very soon.